If you were to write yourself as a book character, what would you be?
An absolute bitch.
Laura DeBarra, author, illustrator, and DIY powerhouse, best known as the Gaff Goddess. A three-time number one best-selling author, she's made it her mission to demystify home, style, and self-reliance. With tools in one hand and a pen in the other, Laura empowers people to own their space and themselves.
One myth about DIY or home care that you'd love to debunk forever?
That there is a gender within it. I always say I've never seen a tool that says insert willy here. There's a lot of shame with how our homes, our bodies and our clothes are. It's always reminding us that we're not clean enough, we're not good enough, we're not thin enough, we're not rich enough, we're not new enough. They fucked our generations by colonizing us. My grandfather used to say, like, if you're working over there, make them say your name.
I feel like, I don't know, maybe a couple of centuries ago, who would you have been? Because you're like out there achieving so much. You've got great opinions. Is there a mission that you want to achieve? Laura DeBarra, welcome. Did I pronounce that properly?
Yeah, it's an Irish name, you should know.
I know, it's Intergar Fod. Laura DeBarra, welcome to Find Your Edge.
Thanks for having me.
You're a well-travelled lady and you're busy, so I know you have a lot going on. But we really appreciate having you here today. To chat about all things from your books to the amazing career you seem to have established over the last few years. But to start off, can you describe yourself, if you were maybe even your elevator pitch? What is that and who are you and what do you do?
So I am an author that writes books about things in the home that we can make last longer, have a better relationship with. I'm into slow consumption. I work in property portfolio development as well. I started out as a fashion designer, went into property, and I'm back in the sustainable fashion world, but I don't class myself as sustainable because I think it's impossible to be fully sustainable. So I'm more about creating long-term relationships with the things that we own and keeping them for longer.
Okay, amazing. The things that we own, but mostly around household objects and...
Yeah, stuff. Clothing and anything that comes in the door of our home, really.
Okay, interesting. So fashion to property and back around and back again, and you kind of... done a 360 back to fashion a little bit still.
Kind of. I'll always be in property because I love it so much and it's what I'm really good at. So when I work with investors, they want something done, I can get it done really easily.
Do you sell property as well or just rental stuff?
Buy, sell, flip, rent, manage. I started out as in property management, I started actually in property styling. And then when I was on projects, I was like, this isn't being done properly, I'll just do it myself, right down to repairing the dishwashers and different appliances. And then an agent screwed us over and I was like, that's never happening again on my watch. Then I started doing all the buying and negotiating, but I had a really good investor at the time who trained me in on everything. Mm-hmm. Something I've learned a lot is with generational wealth, get the person who's the first generation, the earner, are incredible to work for. By the time it goes down, you know the same. So then I ended up just moving up and then working for a different family office where I was doing full flips, like renovations.
Yeah.
But I love it. I'm able to dip into any part of it. I have a really good instinct with property. I think it's because I've rented for so long and it's just a passion of mine that I will always be in it.
Yeah, property is something that has always intrigued me. I worked on building sites growing up and loved seeing projects go from the ground floor up. But when it comes to the actual investment, flipping houses and stuff, for some reason, I've always been so allergic to actually, I think you either know property or you don't. It just makes
sense. The people you meet as well make it out like it's like, no, like, I think it's the tone in property. Like, I feel like you'd be very good at it. I feel like you're someone with good instinct. That's who you got to rely on. Like, when someone says to me, this block is priced like this, absolutely not. You can, when I want to sell something, I'm down in the local cafe or street where everyone is. You know when Cortado's their top-selling thing or a latte's their top-selling thing, the influence that makes on the market. Mm. It's like there's hipster hubs. There's hubs where there's more families. You can tell this stuff by what's kind of on the street. Whereas a lot of people are just doing these valuations online and they're using a lot of AI and a lot of apps. It's such bullshit. You've got to actually understand what's bringing people in through the doors. Are people in this area for industry? Are they here because they love the area and like the bars and restaurants? Are they here for the schools? That's what makes the difference. And that's how you choose on what you spend on flipping, basically.
Wow. So you're very intuitive. That's a huge part of what your property is. I actually thought it was the opposite. I thought it was all about numbers, you know. This needs to be your yield, this needs to be your flip.
That comes after, you know, and that will all make sense. Like once you've worked for people who are really tight, which I have always, the money side of it is that just becomes second nature. But you can know all your figures and become overcautious. It's gut that really gets you there. Like otherwise that's just an Excel sheet. Mm-hmm. You know, you figure that out, you set up your formulas, you type everything and it just spits you out an answer every time. But after that, you've got to have good gut.
How do you develop that? How have you developed that and what's your
So usually, like, there's some secret stuff that I'll never tell anybody.
Okay.
Just because it's secret sauce.
Afterwards, you can...
Yeah, yeah, let you know. And it depends on different area as well. Like, I have calculations based on, like, traffic lights in areas. Like, each traffic light that goes towards one direction, there's a certain price per square foot that I'll go up in. But it makes sense in the business model. Mm-hmm. And then I have a certain calculation that I do if I'm flipping. But anyway, I usually... You just work out... If you want to buy something that's a long-term investment, you've got to be aware of rents in the area. You've got to be aware of when you're flipping and selling, appreciation. There's a lot of new laws that change in Ireland, in England as well, around service charges and stuff. Mm-hmm. You just have to have a good grasp on what could happen and what is happening.
Yeah.
And then you just have a long formula and it spits it out.
This episode of Find Your Edge is brought to you by Hedgehogs vs. Foxes, a video production studio crafting bold cinematic content for brands in lifestyle, corporate, events and more. Visit us at hvf.ie to learn more.
Tell us a little bit about your background. Growing up, was there an influence somewhere, a property influence, a design or fashion influence, or where did this come from?
I think the property side of things was, like, we didn't grow up with, like we weren't, like, a wealthy family or anything like that. So, like, just this dream of wanting to, like, move away and have nice things. And my grandmother was very much like, nothing gets thrown out, you always repurpose. She taught me how to sew. Like, we'd hang out by making and creating. My mum's a really good portrait artist in her spare time, so, like, there was always creativity going mm-hmm. on. But I was always making stuff out of nothing. Like, if my mum was throwing out, like, an outfit, I'd have it made into something else. You know, that's the kind of stuff I love to do. Or, like, this can't go in the bin, you know?
Yeah.
So that was always, like, part of it. But I think the property thing, I always think, like, I put myself through uni, like, working three jobs through my degree most years. And so I'd always be living in shitty flats to have good, like, enough cash flow to have to buy fabric at uni and stuff. So I always was, like, making the best of what I had, like, doing up rooms with nothing and moving things around. And that's the ethos of the books, you know. It's like, start with nothing and just the energy in the room and moving things around and cleaning things down and making it yours. Like, the last thing you should be doing is just replacing everything.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, this is going a direction I didn't anticipate, but I love it. Tell us a little bit about your books. There's three books, is that correct?
So there's Gaff Goddess is the first one, my baby, like, changed my life.
That's so, you're kind of known as the Gaff Goddess, is that correct?
And if it's a piss take, like, you know.
Okay, yeah, but still.
In DIY, they often pigeonhole women into, like, just a certain type of DIY that I don't really like, because I can kick most people's ass at DIY, no bother. Mm-hmm. But then I have friends of mine who are male who are like, I don't admit that I'm not that good because I'm supposed to be. And then I have female friends who are like, I don't want to admit I am, because I just, you know, it's like the attitude. So I bought the trademark for SheIY because I didn't even want to do anything with it. I just didn't want a guy to turn it into something to make us further apart in gender. Yeah. But so Gaff Goddess is how to repair most things in a modern home, dishwashers, fridges, how to buy them, how to hang pictures, all the things that I felt tenants, I had 60 tenants at one time, the things that I was being called out for that they could easily pick up and learn themselves. And then Decor Galore was a chapter in Gaff Goddess that a lot of people, it resonated with a lot of people, where it was like zoning your home and setting it up for you instead of for what it should look like in Pinterest, making your home flow easier and feel easier. If you're late for work every day, there's a way to set your home up to make you get out the door sooner. Yeah. And it makes everything a breeze, but we're not taught that stuff because consumption moves so quickly in our homes, especially, I think, as Irish people as well, coming from a colonized country, we've a much different perception of property and home.
Yeah.
And I think we, you know, often it's like it has to be new and it has to look new, whereas we don't stop to enjoy and set things up. Mm-hmm. So that resonated with a lot of people and became a whole book in itself. How I buy, how I decorate, how I repair, more the decor side. And then from that, there was a section on bed sheets, the wardrobe, shoe care that really resonated with people. And then Garment Goddess grew out of that. That's my technical and production background, design background in fashion. And that's how to buy, care for, and increase the lifetime of your clothing.
So everything's kind of just rolled from the Gaff Goddess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's three pieces from the each book. First thing is, you said you had 60 tenants that you were managing. Mm-hmm. Was that for a property company, or were they your own properties?
It was, no, the investor I was working for, and it was fucking hell.
Okay, so you had to manage all
7 days
dealing
a week
with people. So you've had a lot of time in the trenches dealing with on a one-to-one with these people. Light bulb needs to be changed, etc.
Screaming on a Sunday morning. Some people are sound, but most people hate their landlord, and I'm an extension of the landlord. So
yeah, and that kind of leads me into the second piece about your second book, the Irish piece about owning our own home. Let's chat a little bit about that one, because that is, there's nearly like this relationship with the landlord was like this negative person who owned Ireland, and we were all a bad person if we were a landlord. And But why do we have this need to own our home in Ireland? Do you think that's healthy? And secondly, you know, we're all renting now and not able to afford houses. What's your view on all of that?
I think, I guess, like, because I haven't lived here in probably like, say 18, 19 years, and I've been renting that whole time. And you meet a lot of friends and your friends move away, etc. Like friends of mine that live in Barcelona, they've been renting for 10 years. They put in new kitchens. I prefer that approach to things because 10 years time, they could have a kid or they could want to live in a different area. Here, what I find, I'm like, oh my God, it's such a waste, is that there's a lot of amazing properties in the city centre. So people give out about the city, Dublin's a prime example, and so is Cork. Mm-hmm. They give out about the city centre not being safe. There's a lot of vacant things, but there's no homes above shops.
Yeah.
Most other cities I go to, these beautiful apartments are there because everyone seems, not everyone, a lot of people seem, the majority seem to want like a semi-detached front garden, back garden, and we're pushed into that. Yeah. Like when I get off the plane, when I come back to Dublin, it's always ads for banks with like a cis couple who are getting their mortgage. And it's like really ingrained into us that like this should be the aim, you know? Yeah. Whereas I love lateral living. I'll always want to live in a flat, just one floor.
Okay, yeah.
I love it. I just feel like the houses and all that stuff it's not something that I would be like really killing myself and pushing myself into. Mm. But there is a thing, even I find it's even ingrained in me a little bit that that's like success, you know. Yeah. But then we get into all that trouble with all these estates that they built for that excess, that success in our minds, and they're all empty now. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like the inner city living is something that we've really missed something on. And I feel like if Dublin had a lot more nicely done up properties, you know, I also find that like the way... There's a lot of laws in England. You have to have electrics up to date or you can get fined. Yeah. The deposit scheme is stunning. Like your deposit is held by the government. And if the landlord wants to take it off you, they've got to fight for it. And like we had a person put an iron down, not once, but twice on a carpet. Super nice tenant. He just wasn't quick off the ball.
Wasn't like, good, you know what I mean?
And also just like, you know, wasn't doing it maliciously. But even when I was like, oh, we're going to have to take something out of the deposit, I was like, let's just see what they say. They would only take the amount
of
the carpet. And I thought fair, it's not actually affecting how the carpet works. So if we wanted to get a change, we'd get a change. Here, that would be gone. Your whole deposit would be gone.
Yeah, I've got stone.
So you're much more protected. And also when I visit friends here, I'm like, wait, your landlord's left your washing machine like in a state of disrepair for a month. What, your heating doesn't work? I'm too afraid I might get kicked out. Mm. And I hate hearing that. I don't think tenants are protected as much here at all. Mm-hmm. And I think the perception of the landlord being like the big bully, like the English were with us, some people step into that role. You know, they almost become an asshole when they're a landlord and then they're lovely in the other parts of their lives. So yeah, I'm a bit ranty about the
it's very interesting.
Here.
I think the English landlord thing, not hating on anybody at all, but I think that's in our DNA still a little bit, and there is that, you know. I remember my own mum saying, you know, like money doesn't make you happy. The landlord, that type of person who owns the big house in the village, we're always that little bit different, and I think that's generational sort of stuff that we're all still dealing with. Twice in the same week we've used that line, generational trauma. So between property management and fashion, how, like, obviously you're a very busy and well accomplished lady, how did you manage to fit in writing a book?
I think I probably was at burnout. It wasn't until like I used to get up at 5 a.m, write till about 8. Toxic productivity, I think, personally. Mm-hmm. I got it done and it'll set me up for many more years.
Yeah.
But I think like at the time I knew it was something life changing. I knew I had to break my back for it. Then I'd go to work, then I'd come back, like I would have dinner at my desk and I'd keep working through the night because they're all illustrated as well. So like there's over 100 illustrations in each book. It was really hard work, but ever since then, when my dad and my stepdad passed away 5 weeks apart a couple of years ago, and I was just like, no more, like I'm not doing this anymore. I've worked so hard now. When do you stop? Like, when's the out? So I was just like, I'm never working a Friday again for the rest of my life, or like there'll be one day off I take. And for this year, I don't do Fridays or Mondays usually, unless there's something I can move around. Amazing. But it's giving me some time and space and growth. And like, you can't just keep working yourself into the ground, you know? I had to do it my entire 20s. Like, I'd be closing bars at 3 a.m., rushing back up to my uni, sewing the dresses, going home to shower, coming back in. Like, I feel like there was a part of me that was so used to overworking, I had to be like, wait.
Do you feel guilty when you stop? When you stopped?
No, not anymore.
At the time?
No. No. Yeah,
I think, maybe it's different, but I do think that to really achieve and grow when you're building something from the base up, there has to be a period of that toxic overworking and toxic But like making the decision to stop before you're forced to make that decision to stop, that's hard. And sometimes it does take, unfortunately, something, a big fright to cause that. Mm-hmm. Was there an entrepreneurial side to your dad or your stepdad, anyone like that as well that you could have?
My dad was definitely very entrepreneurial. But I think as well, like when nothing's kind of handed to you, like I'm working since I was 13. Like if I wanted to go to the cinema, I got a job in a deli. Like I used to put the jacket on over my school uniform and be like cutting meat and then like run out and go to the cinema. Mm-hmm. I think I've always just been like, if I want it, there's no one else getting it for me. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know, then I started being like, oh, I want more. And it's not money at all. It's like, I want, even with the working, I want to be able to go to the gym during the week. I want to be able to feel like fresh. I want, when I have days off, I feel more creative. I'm thinking about more stuff. Like I'm studying a night course at the moment and I wouldn't have had time to do that before. Yeah. Slowing down is putting yourself first, you know?
I agree with that. And for creatives, and we've had a few creatives on our podcast, like space and time and that doing nothing space is extremely important because your brain slows down perhaps and it's not, you know, you sleep, you recover, you look after all of those things. But being able to carve that out is the balance of trying to find that. I'm kind of in the phase of a different phase again where I'm back shoulder to the wheel in the trenches. Mm. And like my capacity to make, you know, big steps and make big decisions, I have to like stop, sit down, think before I can get there. So the DIY piece obviously spun from seeing the need for that and that, you know, it's not as difficult as people make it out to be. And it's such a super little category. Every time I think DIY, I think of Tim the Toolman Taylor.
Yeah.
And that world, the DIY piece is excellent. How much of a part of that has that been for your career, like learning DIY? Do you think that learning stuff about changing a plug or, you know, fixing a fridge, has that translated into you now getting these bigger jobs that you're working on as well?
Yeah, I think from my internal belief, it's kind of like I can get it done. I can make a mistake. I'll figure it out. A lot of the learning is in the mistakes. A lot of the learning is in the errors. Fuck, that's just falling off the wall. Why? And then you start to figure out things. And then you start to come up with ways. Basically, you start to like, I always say it's like Google Maps. You kind of zoom out and you can see the bigger thing.
Yeah.
You know,
So
it's that kind of, so you learn that. But I also think with DIY, people trust me a bit more, I think. People are like, okay, she hasn't, you know, I think people are just like, she can figure it out. Like sometimes I'm given stuff by clients that's way above my station, but I think they're just like, she'll figure it out. Don't worry, you know.
And you mentioned ChatGPT at the start of the chat there. The figuring it out piece has been taken away now. The capacity to sit down with a problem and solve it without using a phone. That's gone now. People are starting to take out their phone, their ChatGPT-ing
it. ChatGPT's around all the time.
Getting a video about it. I actually read a study, which I'm not going to be able to remember the numbers on it because I read it on a thing very briefly, but there's like a 40% reduction in neural connections and neurofiring because people are using the ChatGPT equivalent to answer questions. People are writing out full statements, getting everything written out on ChatGPT, and then 4 minutes later forgetting every single piece of the document. I wonder what the future holds. Do you think that there's a space for people who are prepared to get in the trenches and work, use their hands? Do you think they're going to just excel and grow because nobody will be able to do anything else other than ask ChatGPT?
No, I think that's like all scaremongering on us. You know, I think like I use it a lot for work to troubleshoot and double check stuff because we get sent through a lot of stuff that's written by ChatGPT, which is so annoying, or like contracts and things like that. But like, it's wrong a lot. Like I was doing something recently, it was basically pricing a load of different rooms based on quality. It's like 80 rooms or whatever. I usually would go through each one and make an assessment, right? That's 425 a month. And I'd be looking at like the window, all this kind of stuff there. They spat out, like I even sent them the Excel sheet to them. And it was wrong. Every calculation was wrong. So you have to be really careful. Mm-hmm. And then even with laws, when I'm like, are we okay to do this? They'll say, yeah, but it's missing the human
interpretation.
The human interpretation stuff is massive. Mm. Like now, like when I say it with my friends, everyone's just like, oh my God, you've met a guy. Like, what's a star sign? Let's see if you match. And I'm even like, no, because it's using the wrong method of, you know, like it's not that trustworthy. It's only building right now. I think a lot of creatives are afraid it's going to take their jobs, but it's really obvious when something's written by AI. Mm-hmm. You know, it's clunky. I think what it may end up doing is putting actually in years to come, I don't think right now, that people who are just doing it without AI will become more valuable.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll go there. Mm-hmm. You also have a massive presence, obviously, through your books and everything else you're doing on social media. How have you built your audience initially? Was it just through your books or was there mainly from the books? You're on it's online, sorry.
I'm shit at social media, right? Like I
think so.
Oh my God. But like I'm not, I shouldn't monetize it. I should do all that or whatever. But like I think like the time will come for all of that kind of stuff. I had a private following, like a private account, when I was just sharing fixing dishwashers and stuff, being like just to friends on a Saturday morning, this is what I did at work, like this is how you fix this. And I would get like on a Sunday morning 10 requests, which was a lot at the time. I think I had 1,000 followers. Like, who are these 10 people? Someone would go to a dinner party and be like, I fixed my dishwasher because of this girl. So I started getting people, and one person turned out to be an editor at Penguin. And then after a few months was like, you need to write a book. I was like, I already have a book. I give it to tenants. But I remember part of the deal was you have to open up. It's like getting into an open relationship or something, like we get together, you have to open. So I was like, no. So like they were like, it has to be public. Like people have to have access to it because we can't promo it otherwise. And then it just kind of went from there. But I was like last August, I think I had 50,000 followers, and now I think it's like 165 or something. So I just don't show my private life now. It just freaks me out a bit. Like I used to before, I was never someone who'd like get up in bed in the morning. And even though I love watching people like that, I was never too about my, like no one's ever seen my bedroom, or like I don't really walk around my house and stuff.
Yeah.
I am more sharing tips and tricks, but yeah, I don't really show even friends now. I used to always be like putting my friends up and stuff. But like my friends are, some of them are like a manager in a job. They don't want to, you know, the person that they're managing to know they were out with me last night, you know, neck in the martinis. So you have to be a bit careful. But I just feel like people have a thirst for knowledge now from a human and not AI. And I think that's real what knowledge. Made it excel. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny that when I said about your social media being successful, you said you're bad at it and you don't monetize it, which again, markers for success with social media is like, are you making money out of it versus actually giving information and, you know, reaching people, helping people, and in turn I'm sure you are monetizing it through your books or something else like that,
and client deals, you know, they see that and they're like, she knows what she's doing.
It's I use social media as a, you know, I put some stuff up there and it's just another way to connect with people, and people do use it as a reference, and I think that's as far as I want social media to go in my own life. I don't, you know, don't know if it needs to be something that's a you know, another source of revenue. So illustrating, writing and content creation, how do you stay energized and focused? What do you, like, what do you do that keeps you alive?
Well, I will be honest, like spite is my biggest motivator. So on a day, like, no, I'm not joking. It is like, I remember when I broke up with an ex-wife and my life was just like fucked. I remember just being like, and this is so like immature, and all the time I was in my 20s where I was like, I just want to be walking, if I ever bump into him again, because I remember, a long story short, I had met his dad and his dad said to him, like, if she had to be a waitress, she could at least have been good looking. And I remember I used to just keep that in, like, God. Oh no, like fit to batter. And now I would never date the English again. I'm joking. So like, I think that was like, when you're in your 20s, that's such a motivator. I just wanted to be like, I want to be like proud of myself walking by and just be like, you know, like I've made something of my life or whatever. Whereas some of the happiest memories I have are when I was a waitress in that Italian restaurant. Yeah. I worked for an amazing Italian family. Like I earned enough money to get by. I had great friends. So like now that's not really like, you know, but I think if someone says I can't do it, that motivates me. But also I've just learned that there's certain circumstances under which everybody works really well and you've got to figure it out. For me, it's when I've like literally hydrated, I've been to the gym, I've probably done like a bit of boxing or something that day and I've eaten well, especially the day before. I feel like it's like a plant who's had some water.
Yeah.
That is what I'm able to go into the next day and feel good. Sometimes I'm reading the book, The Artist's Way, at the moment, where you just like, I'm not a big journaler, but you just write anything.
Yeah,
like
it's brilliant.
Scribble. Anything, 3 pages or whatever, you never read it again, but it kind of gets, it's kind of like in the morning, they describe it's kind of like a funnel. You just get the blockage out and then everything else can flow for the rest of the day.
Yeah, there's huge research around that. Just documenting it, getting it out of your head, scribbling it down. For people who can't sleep, I tell them, put a notepad beside your bed and just write out whatever stupid words. It doesn't matter if you spell them right, wrong, or if they're on the line, just get it out of your head. It actually is, I think, a really effective thing to do. And it does, like, declunk a bit of the brain a bit, let a bit of space come
in. It's the sediment, just get rid of it.
Yeah. Have you experienced burnout at all? Did I hear you mention the word burnout?
Yeah, I think I was burnt out after those deaths. I got one day off to get married. I got one day off for my dad's funeral. I was getting my hair and makeup done at my wedding, like literally answering and even saying to somebody, oh, sorry, I'm just getting my hair and makeup done for my wedding. And them going, well, I'll only be 5 minutes. And I just realized if you are someone who shows you'll overwork, people will overwork the fuck out of you. They will overwork the fuck out of you. So, and you're putting out to people what you, the kind of tone at which you want to be, you know, worked. Yeah. So, yeah, I felt like my brain, like 50% of my brain wasn't working or something. Mm-hmm. I think I actually was quite like functioning and depressed almost, you know, because mm-hmm. When people pass away, you have a whole new perception on mortality.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking about, who am I? What's going on? And I think I definitely was burnt out. It was harder to get out of bed. It was harder to stay motivated. It was harder to come up with new ideas. And I was like, fuck, am I burnt out? And I'm so used to being able to work. Like mm-hmm. during the final year of my degree, those three jobs, 2 hours sleep a night, I was still able to sesh on the weekends. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had a boyfriend at the time. I was like still a mad bitch when I was doing all of that. And then you start to think you can do that for the rest of your life, but you can't. So
yeah, it catches up with you. Mm. How long do you think that period of burnout lasted for you?
I think I'm probably still a little bit in it, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also getting older. I think that's why I don't work the Mondays and Fridays. Like, not, and I think burnout, people imagine you like under a black cloak, yeah. like under a bridge, but it's not. It's more that you're cautious.
Yeah.
And you're more like, no, I am not going on that.
Do you think that's age, the cautious piece for me, as soon as I hear it, it's like, I think that's just when I'm 40, whatever. It's like, now I just go, I'm just going to think about that for a second. Whereas before, I was just always just jump straight into something.
Oh, I'm heading. I'm like, you're out having martinis. I'd be there in 10. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, with a lemon twist, I'll be up there. But no, you with age, like I'm turning 40 next month or in August. And I just feel like you start to be more cautious because you want longevity, right?
It becomes, well, yeah. I mean, that's what I preach that with my clients. Well, I've been very fortunate to see different stages of different people's careers, and the burnouts, they're knocking on burnout's door and they don't address it. And then, you know, 10 years later, they're in a bad place. So it's something we all need to keep an eye on. I suppose
COVID, it's coming.
Yeah, exactly.
So I always think it feels like, you know, when you get in from a disco when you're young and you can still hear the music.
Yeah.
And you know that feeling. Yeah. Everyone knows that feeling that's been to a disco. Yeah. Burnout is that, but it's not music, it's your emotions.
Yeah.
That is burnout.
Knocking on your door.
That's yeah. That's right before, that's just before you know. You need to calm down, turn the music down.
Yeah, turn the music down, step away from the disco for a while. Is there anyone in particular that's been a big influence on your, you know, good or bad, apart from that boyfriend who you wanted to prove to be spiteful towards? But
I kicked his ass already.
Of course you did. Is there anyone else that you would say, you know what, your mum obviously was great with the creative side of things. Anyone else that you could turn around? Or even Irish designers or creators that you could...
I think there's a few women through the years who haven't even been like well known who have been really inspirational. Like the investors I work for have been great because even though they're men... Like, you know, but they'd be given a lot more different opportunities and they can't understand why when I get up and walk out of a meeting, like sometimes I come in and they say, as someone we haven't met will be like, oh, here she is. Thank God. I'm so thirsty. Can I get a cappuccino? And I'm like, I'm running this entire meeting. You know what I mean? Like you're looking for investment from us. Like this is such a bad start. But like, I feel like a lot of people I've worked with have always been very much like, they've been people who've gone out and got it themselves. And I find them really inspiring. They won't be very well known people, but like, they'll always say, like, just keep going. Like, if you look at something and you think, I can't do that, that just means you haven't solved those kind of problems yet. And once you solve them, then your toolkit gets bigger.
Exactly, yeah. That's great advice and stuff I would have heard. And again, when people ask me about inspiring people, some of my clients I've worked with have achieved amazing things. No one knows who they are. And I'm like, they are the real bosses that they've got 200 Instagram followers. Mm. They've posted once, but they're worth millions. But they give their best advice.
That's
the
dream.
Yeah, and they recognize something in you or in me that they saw in themselves, and they support it. That's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was just an Irish thing, but it is the UK and different countries. It just seems to be that if you have a growth mindset, other people with growth mindsets will pick up on that and nourish it and support it.
Big Middle Eastern companies I've worked with as well. I've just noticed a lot where it's like when they see a spark in somebody and a passion. Like part of the culture is just like, yeah, go for it. They get so excited, you know? Like I've worked for an Iranian family who, they're just the buzz, like when you're like, I'm going to do this, they're just like, show us. Like they always say, show us. Oh my God, we can't wait to see this.
Amazing.
I find like that kind of culture, I always buzz with because there's no bounds, you know?
Do you do a lot of work in the Middle East?
I've just happened to work with a lot of Middle Eastern companies, but I have a lot of Middle Eastern friends as well. And then also, like there's when you work in fashion, you end up working either in the Far East or usually like Turkey or Portugal.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So like my past two clients.
Fabrics and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of my clients have been like Turkish and Portuguese and just a buzz. Like, you know, like I would have always thought that kind of friendliness would have been like an Irish thing, but it goes across a lot of different cultures.
Yeah. So you live in London full time, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you know, is there ever a trip back to Ireland, like a long-term trip back to Ireland? London just offers so much more for you. It's just bigger and more space and better martinis.
Yeah, and all, I don't know, like some of my friends that live here, like they're some of the happiest people I know, like because they love it. I'm never like, some of my friends are like, I would never move back, Ireland, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, whoa, like that's not true. You know, like the food, the people, just there's just so much good stuff here. I lived in Scotland for 5 years as well. Same kind of buzz, community. Like I go to the same coffee shop every day for 5 years and they still act like I've never walked in the door. They literally go,
oh really?
Yeah, like it's like I've walked into somebody's living room and then like, give me a coffee, you know, like it's, whereas here, day three, they'd be like, there she is.
Order.
She loves a Spanish latte. So like, I just don't see myself coming back. Just career wise, I don't know what I'd do. You know, like I wouldn't, in London, I can plug into an investor and you know, like I can work, like the business model of my company works really well like that. I couldn't do that here. Property is quite closed in.
In Ireland?
Yeah, I don't, and like women are getting more, like there's more women in property, but whenever I'm talking to them, they're like, it's just not, you know, like the family office thing isn't as big there. That's much easier to work for.
Family office is like generations of money, basically,
that's
managed by, okay.
Right. And they'll have, I always think of it like as a fake house almost. So like one floor will be their property, one floor will be investing into like energy, another floor will be investing into something else, and then so I would be part of like the property
team. Not a lot of that in Ireland.
No, it was because they fucked our generations by colonizing us, you know.
I love London. They fucked their generation.
They fucking did. Yeah, that's why I always use Dabara. I'm like, my grandfather used to say, like, if you're working over there, make them say your name.
Yeah, so. I like that. Okay, DIY can attract both praise and skepticism. How do you handle that?
I think a lot of skepticism comes from ignorance, right? And I don't mean ignorance as in like, you're so ignorant. I mean, just being unaware of, like when people will say, oh, she can't do this, she can't do that. Like, I'm not saying we're gonna build a house from scratch. You know, there's always that thing, same with sustainability. Oh, she's got a plastic water bottle, but she's supposed to be sustainable. It's like this
perfect thing. Can't wait to catch you out.
Oh, cannot wait. Yeah. But those people, I think when people are like that, you're not the only person they're being like that in their day.
Of course.
They are doing this day in, day out. That's a mindset. So they're just applying that mindset to what you're doing. So it's just a bit of like, whatever, you know.
Water off a duck's back.
Yeah.
And what's the biggest obstacle that you've faced on your journey from getting your social media up and running, doing your books, all the rest of it? Like, if there was one big obstacle, and what did you learn from it?
Time, I think. That like just time is, I wish I had more of it because...
That's also what happens when you get close to 40, just FYI.
It is. You know, they say, what is it one with the house? I watch a lot of Housewives because I have so much time. And one of them says something like, show me someone who is like making loads of money, having loads of sex and having loads of rest. Like there's not, you know, one of them is going, you know. And I think like you, like more like time management is something I'm much better at now, but also it's because I'm not starting out. So I think learning how to rest and then how to surge is something that would have been an obstacle before because I was just surge.
Surge is a nice phrase for it, it's not just, surge is a really nice one. So what would you say failure played a role in your journey then? Are you someone who went, I never failed, I just kept succeeding?
No, everyone fails every day. Like you fail in taking a wrong direction somewhere. But I think, I always think of it like two boats, right? You know that phrase, a sailor never learns in smooth seas. If you were getting into a boat, Titanic prime example, if you were getting into a boat and they were like, maiden voyage, get on board. And someone else was like, I've been in every shit weather. I've had holes that I filled up. I've had all of this. That's the boat you're getting on. So I am more comfortable around people that I have to trust who have failed because they've learned. And I just think you can be really upset and you can be like, fuck. And you can see where you made that one bad decision. But you, if you don't learn from it, then what's the point?
Do you think there's a point where someone moves forward with their career or not based on a failure? That's a silly question in some ways, but what I mean is, I think people go, oh no, I can't do this because I have whatever reason, and then they just decide they're never going to move forward because they've made a small there's been a small little failure, and they kind of exercise that muscle versus someone goes, oh, I can't do this, I'm going to find someone who knows how to do it, or I'm going to learn how to do it, or I'm going to, you know, find a way. I mean, it's, I see it black and white with people in fitness and in, you know, all sorts of different athletic endeavors as well. But I think it's in business. Do you agree?
That like there's people who will literally get into one small stage of discomfort and back out. It really frustrates me. Like I have a friend, like we almost argue about it all the time. And she's saying like, oh, I don't know. And she's so in her head and so scared about stuff, but she has such potential for growth, I think. But then I've had to just like pump the brakes a bit, because maybe she doesn't. And maybe it's just her being fed all the time that she should be getting bigger. She should be changing. She has a lovely life. Why should she have to go out and be entrepreneurial? Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe that fear is actually just her in her gut saying,
it's not for me.
No, and that she can actually grow in other ways. It doesn't have to be an entrepreneurial way.
Yeah, that's, I think, like putting your own values and views of the world on someone. I have to be so careful of that. I see, because of what I do, I guess, I'm working with people and coaching them. So I see their potential. And it's a, such a frustration that you're like, oh, if you can just get your head around this, if you just apply yourself to that.
But that's what we would do.
Exactly.
And
that's,
I think,
just putting our filter on. They're probably saying, if you just slow down and stop.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And I think it's like with training in the gym, with women, you're like pushed into HIIT training all the time, and like these bikini training, and like, do you know, this like really...
I mean, that's the circles you're hanging around with.
But this is what I'd be seeing in algorithms. And then when I got a trainer, I was like, I don't run, like I don't do cardio, like blah, blah, blah. And he was like, but you need to do these things, but you need to find your way of doing it.
Exactly.
So like, I think that's the same thing. Like if my friend is trying to, you know, she wants to add something else into her life, it doesn't have to be this big vision entrepreneurially. Like it could just be that she's taking up a sport that's feeding that competitive edge.
Yeah. Algorithms are, yeah, they're so destructive in like, you know, whether it's DIY, whether it's property, or whether it's fitness or finances. Like we're being told what we should do, and it's like, this is what the stereotype is. And so I'm 24 years working in the fitness industry, and I remember going to do corporate talks when I was like 20 and 21, and the feedback was people would say stuff like, we thought he would be like bigger and musclier. This would be the feedback on
how dare.
Because it was the stereotype of what PTs were. This is 20 years ago, that they were like 6'4" and, you know, whatever, athletic Eastern European guys. And it's just so funny that that filter is still there and still coming through, where women do feel like they need to be bikini models, or
like, you know, if a bikini can be tied around your body, that you're bikini ready.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? This whole thing that it needs to be, that's the big patriarchy thing, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, I know it is. It's a bit toxic, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. It's very toxic. Has there ever been a massive project fail that you thought, this is it, now it's all over?
No, my brain just doesn't go there.
Okay, brilliant.
Like we have had, and I'm not joking, there has been stuff go wrong at work where I've just been like, literally, we're all fucked. Like there has been a cover not put on a roof in an entire new two-story building that we were doing. I actually was like, I could die with shock in this. Like, but you just keep going. And I've learned that from a friend of mine that I work with. I have seen him where there's been like a basement get flooded from one of their jobs, and it was full of people's like Jaguars, all that stuff. And I was like, how do you cope with this? And he was like, you get it fixed, you move on. That attitude I love, like not sitting there beating yourself up, like rah, 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 like move it forward, keep the momentum with it.
Yeah. Again, the people you're around makes such a difference, because you learn these skills of how to deal with a failure, and that's such a big skill to learn, right? But again, if you're around people who just see failure and that's all they see, they don't see everything else in the room.
Yeah.
It holds you back.
They get into their head as well. I think people, there's a shame in Ireland that's attached to everything.
Yeah.
Oh my God, you did this, you did that. It's like, no, like, so what? Something went wrong. Like, you didn't mean for it to go wrong.
Yeah.
Move.
What would you say to someone trying to follow in your footsteps? And it's a tricky one, because this isn't a mountain that's been climbed before. You've created your own little peak here. But if someone wants to go down a route of, you know, whether it's the design end of things, working improperly, or is there any advice you'd give someone?
I feel like, because it is a hard, like you couldn't go on the footsteps because nothing has been, it's hard. Nothing's been handed, and I haven't been able to follow something on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. But I just think a lot of, if you want to, what I would say is like, what I started doing is working for very successful people and being somebody that they could rely on and trust. And I think if you can really lean into who you are as yourself, because entrepreneurs and investors are always looking for just someone who is authentic. They do not want perfection. They will train in the parts of you that aren't perfect. Like I was using my phone calculator and then putting the answer into Excel. I didn't know you could multiply in Excel. So like that, like I was not like a finance girl. And then I was running entire finance meetings. All the spreadsheets were done by me. And that only took a few years. They'll train you on your weak spots. Mm-hmm. But learning who you are, how authentic you are, showing up, making sure, and this sounds like nuts, I guess, but like, being early, like getting enough sleep, being rested, having space during your day, being organized. That's the stuff where people who want to take you under their wing really like, because they want to fill the spaces up with training you to be better. Mm-hmm. So like I wouldn't have gotten that job with the investor if he hadn't seen that I had good work ethic, but I was organized, self-driven, motivated. And they want to be able to rely on you. Mm-hmm. So if you're not good at being early, learn to be early.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in like a toxic positivity way, but it's those kind of things. If you really want to be mentored by somebody who has a lot of success, they need people who are just like organized and ready to go. And they're just, and they're, it's simple, you know, they're not like weird about it. Like you just have to be, yeah, I'm ready for action.
Mm-hmm. You use the word we a lot when you're talking about projects you're working on. Is this subcontracted people you're working with, or do you actually have employees and a team that you work with all the time?
It depends on what investor I'm working with. And even this year, like I've said to them, because I'm studying my NI course and I'm working on this big kind of like side project, I'm not in and out as much. So like the builders, I would know they're able to just carry on without calling me.
Yeah.
But usually it would be like I'd usually be training and someone else for buying, and then we'd use the same builders for different investors.
Mm-hmm. How do you find working with men, builders and different people like that? Do you get the, it was there a level of like you had to prove yourself to them, or has the world changed and evolved now to a stage where, you know, whether it's a project manager, it's female, male or indifferent, it doesn't make any difference. What's your initial, currently versus 10, 15 years ago, how is it?
I feel like when I first started out, they just thought I was thick, but a lot of that had to do with being in England and being Irish and a lot of prejudice. Like on phone calls with really Tory guys, I would get, and I'm luckily I was working for a Middle Eastern company at the time who were very aware of prejudice and people making these like kind of like microaggressions against people. So I was on a speaker call and the guy kept saying, oh my God, you're speaking gobbledygook, like blah, 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 blah. And then he said something like, he said something about Irish and being animals, something like we should have trained you animals better, but very posh guy. Mm-mm. I was like visibly shook. We never worked with him again. Mm-hmm. So if you work with the right kind of people, I find like I used to feel myself over kind of like, I am smart, I am good at this or whatever. But then I just stopped working with anyone who was prejudiced because it was making me nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I work with people who are super respectful, but they will every now and then be like, God, you really know your stuff. Like I get that a lot, but I'm like, you can't just change people's childhoods and how they were raised to think about women, or if they've only been exposed to a woman who maybe isn't doing like things that they see every day in work. But I think it is changing. I think men's attitudes towards women, predominantly the ones that I see, it's more like we're all on a level.
Yeah, and everyone, you know, not everyone wants it. That was the wrong thing to say, but it's difficult because there is still that you are a female, I am a male. There is a, and I think there's a healthy balance to like a bit of banter, a bit of, we're all working together on this project that's supported. And 10 years ago in London, that was obviously very different, as you mentioned. Do you think that there's still an element of, you know, that Irish-English piece that you're still battling and fighting with, or has that calmed down as well? Aside from the male-female piece, are you now just established Irish person that's in London and everyone respects you, or is there still a little element to that?
I feel like because I'm working with so many different cultures, like it's sometimes like one of the guys on our team who's English, he's like, I just feel like a massive bastard on the team that I'm trying to prove. And I'm like, oh, the tables have turned, you know? So I think like, yeah, I do find the Irish thing, especially if you look at what's happening with NECAP now. Mm. I feel like it, and I feel the same thing about misogyny. When that's there now, it's a 10. Before there was maybe like an undercurrent, but people who hate women, people who do not like the Irish, they are now, usually I never see these people, but they're online and they're the loudest. I call them the flapping birds.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to tell you my opinion. I want to tell you my opinion. And unfortunately, we have to hear these people a bit more. So I feel like maybe it's always been there, but more than ever, we have to be subjected to it.
Mm. Are you on a bit of a mission
in
your life? You've got like this drive. I feel like, I don't know, maybe a couple of centuries ago, who would you have been in a community, because you're like out there achieving so much. You've got great opinions, what's, you know, really strong, great opinions on feminism, even a little bit, and equality in Ireland, England. And like, is there a mission, an underlying mission that you want to achieve in your life? If you were to leave a legacy behind, what do you want that to say?
God, I don't know. I went to see an astrologist at the start. Okay. She changed my fucking life. Unbelievable. Best money I ever spent. She's this, she's actually an analyst and a psychologist as well. She's in LA. Unbelievable. And she spoke about like life path and life mission. Mm-hmm. And she was saying like a lot of the work I do is that it will have had a positive impact on the planet and on people, mm-hmm. and just keep flowing through life like that. Mm-hmm. But I think long term, I'd love to not live in one place. I'd love to set up a life where I lived, you know, by the sea for part of the year, where I live in a big city, I can see all my friends. Like, that's what I would love. Yeah. And I would love to be part of creating something that takes away shame around this. That sounds a bit nuts. And I think a lot of, especially women and men, and I think being from a colonized country, there's a lot of shame with how our homes, our bodies and our clothes are.
Yeah.
So people are constantly consuming something new, and it's fucking up the planet, but it's also fucking up our mindset. Mm. Like, there's a beauty in having a little hole in your jumper or a bit of pilling. That jumper's been on you during amazing times. Yeah. And women are targeted towards with laundry products that it has to smell really clean or you're a bad mother. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, it's the packaging on stuff. It's always reminding us that we're not clean enough, we're not good enough, we're not thin enough, we're not rich enough, we're not new enough. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if my work can, even in a small way, seep into that. Like, I'm working with Primark kind of behind the scenes since last year, and we've just started doing some public stuff. But like, you know, that's a lot of that's entry level. Like, there's people buying baby grows for £5. That's all they can afford. Why are they not the best baby grows that we are putting out there? You know, why they should. And they really believe in that as well. It's the value customer. I would love to my work to just to seep into where people feel like they don't have to feel like newness makes them a better person.
And always across, you know, property, fashion and everything like that, you kind of just want to hit that entire world.
Yeah.
I love it. So what does success mean to you now compared to when you first started, nearing your 40s, if that's okay to say again, yeah. you know, versus starting out where you were working in an Italian restaurant and success was completing this and completing that? Like, is success now that you can do that 3-day week of not having to go into the office Monday, Friday, or is there a different meaning to it?
I think, like, success for me now is, there's probably like three parts to success. You know, there's the financial side, but as I said, like, some of my happiest times in my life was when I had like no money, and I learned more as a waitress than I learned in a lot of jobs I ever worked, you know. It's why I feel like I'm good with people, and I'm able to not feel embarrassed when I'm doing pitches and stuff. And that all came from working in hospitality. Yeah. You're walking up to a table of strangers and you're handling stress and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and you're multitasking. I feel like one, like, the financial side of things, success for me is like just not having to worry about money. And I don't mean like that's not being on a yacht, but like not having to, you know, overwork myself for anything, you know. I'd love to, like, that's important to me. Another thing is like having a community and friends and showing up as a good friend and a good family member. Mm-hmm. Like, even when I was out for like dinner and drinks with my family last night, it's making, you know, I should have gone to bed early and I should have done this, you know, like, but I wanted to go out and kind of keep building those memories.
Yeah.
So having a community is really important to me, especially in London. Everyone mm-hmm. left after COVID. It's hard when you're an older woman and, you know, like older 30s women to make friends. So like, I try, if I meet a neighbor in a hallway, I'm sparking up conversation. And then like 2 years later, me and my neighbor meet like once a week, we sit on the couch, we have a gas, or once every 2 weeks, whatever. I go for drinks with another neighbor. Community is really important.
Yeah.
I want to feel like I have people in my life and routines in my life that involve a lot of people. And then I guess like the third one would be like your soul and your body, right? Success is like that you're treating yourself well, that you're like living well really is like having enough sleep, having enough food and nutrients, and having a longer lasting vessel that you're living in, you know. Mm-hmm. They're like the three things for success for me.
They're brilliant things for success.
If you're brilliant in finance and you're making loads of money and you're ruining your body and your mind and you're not giving enough time to people, like, is that true success? It's like a cake that there's three slices of, right? Mm-hmm. Make shit of the other two. Real success for me is when I find that really nice balance, and I'm getting there with it, which is good.
That is a juggling act, and mm-hmm. you know, there's many facets to it. So you're doing something with Primark?
Pennies.
But other than that, what's next for you? What big projects are you working on that you're allowed to tell us? Because I'm getting the, you know, I'm sure there's lots of private stuff going on.
Yeah, and there always is. And also, like, I work with a lot of NDAs and clients that I just can't even talk.
Yeah, of course.
They're the most fucking fun. Oh my God. But no, next is just, I'm telling you, that astrologer, that chat just made me realise, like, there's a lot that I've worked on, and there's a message there that I have that I could work on a bit more, like, and there's like the course I'm doing at night and stuff like that, like, I'm just really enjoying it. Next for me would probably be simplifying, like, right now it's like author, illustrator, da, 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 da. And I like doing different things, but I'd like to streamline things a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. And work on, if you were to streamline it down to one thing,
I could never do that.
Yeah,
but I think it's more like, even illustration wise, I just don't monetize my illustration anymore, and now it's just for me. Like, I go to art classes in London, there's a lot of free art classes around. Nice. And then now I'm just drawing, watching TV and not thinking, can I monetize this? Is this for a book? Is this part of a contract?
No, I get that. Now, we have quickfire questions.
Okay, go.
And I never write the quickfire questions and I've not read the quickfire
questions. So I'm not judging you, is it?
So don't judge me, and it's okay if you say pass, okay?
Oh, fuck, all right.
Before we go through all the quickfire questions, I just wanted to add into that last little a little question for people who want to follow your journey, because I know there'll be loads of people who are very intrigued. Best handles to get you on, best places to see what you're doing.
Laura DeBarra on everything, okay. But I mainly use TikTok and Instagram.
Okay, yeah. Brilliant.
And like, not a lot up there. It's usually just tips videos.
Yeah.
But there's newspaper articles out there from the books where they deep dive on how you did things and mindset. Right.
And if people want to get the books?
Oh, they're in every sexy bookseller. So like everyone, like
sexy booksellers.
Every sexy bookseller right, has okay. those books. But because they're published by Penguin, they're, you know, like they're everywhere.
Yeah.
But I would always say Kenny's in Galway. Free shipping within Ireland, best international shippers. They're an indie bookseller. They're a family-run company.
Okay.
They are shit hot. They're so quick at shipping. They're my favourite bookshop. I would buy from them.
Brilliant. So we'll make sure everyone knows that. Okay, quick fire questions. One tool every home must have.
Drill.
Drill, okay. Most satisfying fix ever.
Siliconing a bath.
Favourite part of writing your books?
Finishing draft one, I always say it's like growing the hair and then you're just creating a haircut by editing.
Your dream project?
Warehouse flat in Hackney.
You've worked on that? That would be your dream?
Yeah.
Okay. If you were to write yourself as a book character, what would you be?
An absolute bitch.
Most useful home repair tip?
When you're hanging something on a wall, remember to think about the wall, what the wall is made of, the weight of what you're hanging and what the hanger can take in weight.
Okay. If your writing were a cocktail, what would be in it?
So it would be a vodka martini with a lemon twist and then a second lemon twist and another lemon twist around the rim of the glass. Extracts were cold, never shaken because I don't like the energy, just nicely stirred.
You've put some thought into that one. Favourite item in your laundry cupboard?
Oh, my steamer.
Okay. Is that one of those that's the other handy? One myth about DIY or home care that you'd love to debunk forever?
That there is a gender within it. I always say I've never seen a tool that says insert willy here. So like, why are you talking about women and men?
We won't go any further on that one. One tool you wish you never bought?
Cheap tools.
Cheap tools, I agree with that. What's your guilty pleasure?
Martinis.
Most ridiculous thing you've ever DIY'd?
Having to fix a bed after we had a banker living in it. That just made absolute shit of the bed frame. Through nocturnal activities.
If Gaff Goddess had a soundtrack, what would it be?
It would be anything by Donna Summer.
First thing you do when you wake up?
Stretch.
Oh, very good. Song that instantly puts you in a good mood?
Oh, yeah, it would be Donna Summer. Okay. Anything.
All-time proudest achievement?
Gaff Goddess.
One thing you can't live without?
One thing I cannot live with, capers.
Really?
I ate so many capers once my eyes got swollen and I thought I'd go to the doctor.
Oh my God.
I love them.
Okay. One skill every DIYer should master.
Confidence.
Confidence. If you could have dinner with anybody living or dead?
My stepdad.
If you could switch lives with any fictional character, who would it be?
If I any fictional character. Oh my God, that's so tricky.
Really? This one, most people go, Batman.
Fictional character. Batman.
That's what most people say.
I find
somebody
Batman
like that.
So lame.
Yeah, well, you can tell us who your fictional character is then. Take your time.
Can I take a second?
You can take 5 seconds.
Oh my God. So it's like movies, basically. Oh, I know exactly who it would be. American Gigolo. Do you see the car he drives?
No.
The most amazing Mercedes ever, honestly.
Okay, so it's the car.
He dresses really well. He lives in this Hollywood, like, now he ends up being involved in a murder and he's also like...
But that's irrelevant because he has a nice car.
Listen, everyone's got a bad job. But he lives in an amazing apartment, amazing body, amazing clothes. It's the most stunning movie for aesthetics.
Okay, brilliant. What's your party trick?
Talking.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And what a one to finish on. Laura DeBarra, absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
My heart is racing after that.
Thank you. That was brilliant. Look forward to seeing all of these great things you're doing in the future.
Thank you.